Welcome to the Rise Method podcast, where we make fitness information available to everyone. I'm Steve. Let's jump in.
What's up, guys? Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Rise Method podcast. In today's episode, I'm flying solo. Yes, Laura is a bit caught up with a few other tasks right now, so can't make it into the podcast this week. So we've got no resident human. So it's only us aliens here rocking out at the Rise Method podcast. But look, team, today is an exciting week. We are in week 6 of the current BTC, the Body Transformation Challenge, and we are on the final days of the very special 14-day Easter Shred Challenge. So it's exciting times at Rise, like always. So week 6 is a really cool time because it kind of marks the halfway point of this 12-week challenge, where we have set time to develop our habits and our routines and, you know, making changes to our environment and really starting to build momentum. And that's a really powerful thing, like building momentum towards fitness, towards our goals. And especially if you have goals like, you know, I want to lose weight, or I want to build some muscle, I want to get strong, or even like athletic goals, like, oh, I want to be able to deadlift X amount, or be able to jump a certain high, or run at a certain pace. We need an element of momentum, right? Because if we take something like weight loss as an example, the things that make weight loss easy is when we change our environment. We need to change our behaviors and make change into our lifestyle. And those things can take time. So once we commit to a weight loss journey, we've started to change our diet and change our habits, changing the activities that we like to do. So instead of, you know, sitting on the couch after work, it is, okay, I got to put my runners on and go for a walk, or going to the gym, and I've got to do my meal prep and eat a certain way and make all these big changes. Just the commitment to those changes starts to build momentum. And we reach a point now, once we're a month and a half in, that those changes are established, we've got momentum, and it's almost easier to kind of keep on going. Sure, things get hard. You know, we've got fatigue layering on, and we've got compounding effects of, oh, geez, you know, is this actually working? But we've made these changes to our lifestyle. We've got this momentum going that now it's becoming easier and easier to do. So we hope that you're getting to a point where it's almost harder to revert, because when we're thinking about these changes, losing weight is great, and getting to a point where, you know, we've got a six pack and we've got striations and the veins and all the things is fun. But what's the point of being fit and lean and in shape for, you know, a month or 3 months or 6 months out of your life? We want to be in a position where we can maintain this over time. And maintaining things is relatively easy, right? Maintaining things is easy if you've made those kind of big rock changes in your life. So that might be that you're, you know, consuming more fruits and vegetables, or you're choosing to drink water, or even like diet sodas instead of like wine or beer or soft drinks and stuff. Or if you're choosing to have, you know, low fat milk in a coffee rather than full fat milk. So all these little changes add up to a point where you can have a fit and healthy lifestyle without really feeling like a fit and healthy person. Take myself as an example. If you were to hang out with me for a day, you'd be like, "Whoa, Steve! Like, what are you eating here? Or what are you doing here?" And those types of things, because I've made enough changes in my life where I can maintain my results, maintain my lifestyle, and still enjoy things like, "Oh, hey, yeah, I can go out for a burger for lunch," and still maintain my body weight where it doesn't fluctuate up and down by a big margin. My performance still stays consistent and high and a good quality because I've trained myself to a point where I'm training hard. I've got a high physical activity level. I'm eating lots of fruits and vegetables and taking all the big rocks, that I'm allowed and able to go and do these activities and still stick within my goal. So we hope that at this stage in week 6, you've implemented some changes to your lifestyle. You've modified your environment so that you've made it easy. You've got the momentum going. You've done the hard work. And now it's just a matter of being consistent and not letting, for lack of a better word, the shit pile up, where you've got stresses and deadlines and life and you know, like a sickness around the corner and things happening in your life, without letting that pile up, that you can still maintain this consistency, keep up the momentum as we roll on to the final weeks of this challenge and the beginning of the next couple of years of your fitness journey. Now, Talking about the Rise Method, I want to give a quick overview of the leaderboards right now. So we have the brand new April leaderboards, and at the time of this recording, it is the 11th of April, and we have new leaders in our leaderboards from our last podcast. So as a quick run through for our workout leaderboard, again, workout leaderboard is you get 2 points per workout you complete and 1 point per activity you complete, like a walk or a run, kind of a cardio-like activity. So in first place, we have The Paladin on 121 points. Second place, we have Jennifer on 113 points. Kyle in third place on 111 points. Julie in equal fourth place with Stacy on 93 points. So congratulations to the leaders of the workout leaderboard so far on day 11 of the April leaderboard. Next, we've got our PBs leaderboard, personal best. So you earn a personal best when you achieve a personal best in your workout. So you get 1 point per personal best. So in first place, we have Michelle, 53 points, Sarah on 52 points. So very close neck and neck race between Michelle and Sarah. Third place, we have Julie on 37 points, Jolene on 35 points, Jennifer on 34 points, and Travis on 34 points. So very close neck and neck race around that top one and two, and then around that top three to five. And then finally, for our nutrition leaderboard, we have eight people in first place with 11 points, meaning that they haven't missed a day of nutrition yet. And that is Angela, Jennifer, Jessica, Joanne, Karen, Catherine, Sharon, and Sherry. So that's just in alphabetical order. So congratulations, team, for being consistent and meeting your nutrition goals every single day for the past 11 days in this April leaderboard. Next, we have a quick summary of the Easter Shred Challenge. Now, the Easter Shred Challenge was to complete 20 workouts in 14 days, and you get 1 point per workout. So the following Rise members have completed the challenge so far. Today's Thursday, so we've still got Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Sunday. So we've got Jennifer, Kyle, Vanessa, Julie, The Paladin, Warren, Stacy, Lavina, Melissa, Sarah, Lauren, Michelle, Rebecca, and Sue. So congratulations to everyone who's completed so far. So we've got a few more days left, and there's quite a few that are on just the second base on the Rise Method leaderboard. The way it works is we are going to give away 3 12-week platinum memberships to those who complete the Easter Shred Challenge. That's going to be pulled randomly out of a hat, and we'll be releasing that on Monday the 15th. Now, those who have entered the Easter Shred Challenge have a very special invitation to continue on with their fitness journey at the Rise Method, where they can join the final 6 weeks of the BTC. They can join the final 6 weeks of the B2C for a very special price of $79, and they can enter the BTC competition. So they'll have 6 weeks, and they'll be able to enter the competition with those who have started from week one, the last 6 weeks, and they can enter all of the main prizes, where they can win part of the $5,000 prize pool. So we've got male and female weight loss categories, male and female muscle building categories, and the very first time, the teams category. So each category will be winning a $1,000 prize pack, which is a mix of a cash prize plus a subs prize pack. So join the last 6 weeks of the 12-week challenge if you've done the Easter Shred Challenge, and you can enter that competition too. Finally, we have another competition, very unique competition to platinum members, called the Platinum Summit. And the Platinum Summit is if you collect enough points over the 12-week period, you rise to the top of the Platinum Summit, and you could win one of 5 $100 Visa gift cards. So far, we have 3 Rise members who have completed the Platinum Summit, and we're in week 6, so congratulations. And that's Catherine, Jennifer, and Jennifer, so 2 Jennifers who have reached the top so far. So those 3 Platinum members will go in the running to win 5 Visa gift cards. So if you're playing along at home, if just 2 other people rise to the top, those 5 people will win the 5 prizes. But it'll be in a similar style to the Easter Shred Challenge, where we picked randomly out of the hat, and those platinum members will win a $100 Visa gift card. So lots happening in the Rise Method, and it's not too late to join the program. It's not too late to trial our program for 7 days for free in the Kickstart Challenge, and join us as a Platinum member where you get to chat with me directly on the Rise Method app. You'll be able to jump into the Platinum Summit for your chance to win Visa gift card and, of course, entry into every challenge that we run at the Rise Method. Now, team, I have a couple of questions that I would like to answer that were sent to me from Rise Method members, which I think are quite interesting. So the first question, which was a bit of a long-winded question from one of our Platinum members, where we were talking about shoes, and this individual was getting lots of shin splints and was asking, well, what do you think are the best shoes for running that would prevent shin splints? Okay, so it was a very interesting and a bit of a specific question. And to answer it in parts, we can answer broadly talking about shin splints, and then secondly, talking about shoes. So firstly, shin splints, what are they? Shin splints is a more of a broader presentation of pain in the front of the leg, and the leg being determined as, you know, between the knee and the ankle, where we have the thigh being between the hip and the knee. So the leg is generally what we would call like the shin or the lower part of the leg. So any pain along the front there is kind of an umbrella term of, you know, like this shin related pain or shin splints. Now, most of the time shin splints are a bit of like a stress fracture, right? Easy way to understand it. You know, you've got the bone of the shin, and the shin is being placed under so much stress that there's, you know, very small, fractures, for lack of a different term, along the shin. And that's causing inflammation and the muscles to kind of tighten up and everything to be generally sore. This is generally worse in the morning or after like longer periods of activity. Now, it's mostly caused when we rapidly increase the load applied to the lower limb. Okay, so activities, let's say like running, when you run, every stride, every step you take, every move you make, every step you take, there is between 7 and 9 times your body weight going through each leg. So for math, let's say me, I'm about 100 kilos. If I'm running, every stride I take is, you know, almost 900 kilos of force going through my leg. Okay, you know, round it up to basically a ton. There's a ton of load going through my leg, each leg, when I'm taking a stride. So there's lots of force going through your legs. Okay, now if you start a running program, what tends to happen is you build up your cardiovascular fitness really quickly. You build up your mental capacity really quickly, especially if you are returning to running after a period of time. Your cardio is like, oh yeah, I remember this. Your brain's like, oh yeah, I remember this. But your body isn't quite there yet. So you place lots of stress onto bones and soft tissues and muscles that weren't prepared for it. So what ends up happening is we have a lot of inflammation kind of occurring. The structure is like, oh shit. And then we actually have a little bit of trauma to the structure, and then it leads to a presentation of shin splints. So how do we manage shin splints? Well, we need to manage our load. So if you went from zero to running 10Ks a week, you would want to reduce the amount of running you do so that the body can heal again. Or if it's not running, if you're doing other activities like lots of skipping or jumping or that type of thing, where you're having lots of impact and high amounts of force going through the leg, that could you need to find ways to reduce that load so that your body can heal, and then slowly build up your load over time so that your body can adapt to that. Okay, so going to the main part of the question of what are the best shoes to prevent something like shin splints when running, okay? Well, the answer for that is really, it doesn't matter too much, okay? So the best shoes to prevent injuries are shoes that are the most comfortable for you. So despite what is marketed and promoted as, you know, healthy shoes or injury reducing shoes or whatever, the best shoes are shoes that you find comfortable. And there's quite a bit of data that supports that in the literature. So we would recommend that you don't get too bogged down into the details of shoes, or like what shoes to get. You know, find shoes that are comfortable for you, that fit you well, that you like to wear, and they're probably the best shoes to go running in. Now, you can have deeper conversations around shoe technology of, okay, well, if it had a really thick heel, that might promote a different running style so that load gets transferred into a different part of the body, like maybe through the hip rather than through like the ball of the foot, for example, or around the knee or something like that. And that might come down to difference of, okay, is this a thick heel? Is it barefoot shoe? That type of stuff. But I would argue that, you know, your running style would be your running style regardless of the technology of the shoe, and you might be better off by modifying your running style to change the load rather than choosing the shoes to change your load, okay? So if you find that when you're running, you are doing lots of heel striking, so that means that when you run, your first point of contact is you try to get that heel down first, you might benefit from trying to get the ball of your foot to touch down first, right? So you're just changing up the running stride slightly. Try to lift the knee up higher, maybe have a longer stride length. So those slight modifications might lead to changes in load to decrease the amount of tension that's going through the shin. Okay, so if you are dealing with, let's say, shin splints, those types of modifications, like if you're striking on your heel, try the ball of the foot. If you're striking on the ball of the foot, try for your heel. If you are constantly almost dragging your feet, try lifting your knees up a bit higher, have a longer stride length. That might be helpful if you are running and dealing with a pain like shin splints, so that you can just change the load slightly so load is going to different parts of the body. Okay. Next question was from actually another Platinum member, which was talking about pre-workout meals. And they were asking if fruit before a workout is a good idea and if they should still have a protein shake after they work out. Okay, so more broadly, the question might be, you know, what should I be eating before my workout and what should I be eating after my workout? And the best way to approach this is to try to simplify it, because on paper, there are some benefits to pre-workout nutrition where we're having maybe 25% of our carbohydrate for the day within an hour of our training, plus a bolus of protein, meaning about 30 grams of protein and a very small amount of fat. And then after our workout, within that hour of our training, we have a similar meal of a bolus of protein plus some carbohydrate and a very small amount of fat as well, and lots of water in between those two things. So yeah, okay, we could get bogged down in those details, or we could try to simplify it where we go, if you're training at, let's say, midday, you would want to have some sort of food leading up to that training event. So if you are eating maybe within an hour of your training session at midday, you would want to be having food that is kind of easy to digest. So trying to choose maybe like lower or more simple carbohydrate so that it's easy to digest, and away you go. Having plenty of water leading up to that event so that you can perform well. If you're not eating in the hour leading up to your training session, I would recommend that you try to have a meal within the 3 hours leading up to that session and opting for more complex carbohydrate before that meal. So instead of choosing to have, white rice, you might be choosing to have like a brown rice as an example. So that would be a really easy way to simplify pre-workout nutrition. If that is still challenging, especially if you're training early in the morning, it might be easier to have, let's say, a piece of fruit like a banana and then a protein shake. So you have some carbohydrate that's easy to digest and a protein shake prior to your workout so that you can fuel your body appropriately before you train. Now, of course, if you train in a fasted state and you've been doing that for forever, okay, that's your routine, that's what you do, and it might be difficult to try to change it up. Because that habit routine is more powerful than what might be optimal on paper. And the main part when it comes to pre-workout nutrition, like I said before, is the hydration element of it. So drinking plenty of water leading up to the event is really important, because just a small amount of dehydration leads to a massive decrease in performance. And this is particularly important if you're training early in the morning. So if you've just woken up and you're in the gym within 10 minutes of your eyeballs opening, which kudos to you, that's amazing. For me, I wake up, and by the time I get into the kitchen and open the door, let the dog out to go to the toilet and then feed the dog and drink some water, it's, 10 minutes gone, right? So 10 points to you. That's what we're looking at, where we're drinking plenty of water before we train. Now, what do we do after our workout? So what's commonly marketed is something like a protein shake. And the reason why would be something like a whey protein, maybe a whey protein isolate, really easy to digest, really quick to absorb. So that might lead to a fast track in recovery. The problem with that now is that more and more literature is kind of suggesting that, hey, you know, if you are consuming your a good protein intake, you know, maybe around 2 grams per kilo of body weight, there is no significant difference if you are choosing to have that protein immediately after a workout, or you know, maybe in the few hours afterwards, and that as long as you're reaching your protein targets for the day, it's not too important if you have a protein shake or not. It can be a nice way to psychologically recover after your workout. You go, okay, great, I've finished my workout, now it's time to have my protein shake, and it tastes really nice and it's really sweet, chocolatey, cool, great, away you go. Or again, if it's just part of the routine of training, I've trained, now I have a protein shake, I'm in the zone, and away you go. So the best way to approach post-workout nutrition is, again, to opt for a meal. So for me, the way that I would have my routine is I am training more in the mornings these days. So I would have my breakfast, usually something like oats with some blueberries, banana, and I would have a pre-workout out with some salt, drink plenty of water. So that would be my routine for breakfast. And then after breakfast, which I go and train in my garage, so I come back in the garage, dealing with the kids, getting everybody ready, I would have second breakfast shortly afterwards. So in terms of timing, I might be having first meal at, let's say, 5:15 or so in the morning, and then my second breakfast probably closer to like 7:30, 8 o'clock. And you know, those are kind of like 2.5-3 hours apart, and that is a nice routine for me, so that I can have a meal before I train, meal after I train, and then my next meal would be around lunchtime or so. So that's a nice routine to kind of get into. Final question here is, again, a bit more of a long-winded question, and these are the cliff notes. I'm going away on holiday for a week, and I want to stay on track with nutrition. There are a few nights that I'm going to enjoy dinner and not think about calories. My hotel has a gym, so training is not an issue. Do you have any tips for nutrition? Okay, so main takeaway here is that we are moving to an environment that's different to what we're normally in for a week. A holiday, so we're relaxing, trying to enjoy ourselves, right? And we are, you know, trying to stay on track with our nutrition. Great, I love it. Now, first thing that we need to appreciate is that if you zoom really far out, a week on holiday is such a small percentage of, you know, a year, for example. That's just 2% of a year, small percent. So if you did go on holiday and you wanted to just disconnect and have a break from everything, you probably could go on a holiday and enjoy yourself for the week. You know, you could eat what you want, you know, train, no issues, get all the massages and all the things that you'd like on a holiday so that you enjoy yourself, right? You've paid for this situation and you might not want to burden yourself with things like dieting and stressing over nutrition and just have a great time. That's the first thing that we need to understand and appreciate, right? Now, if you were a little bit more committed, you on the other side of the spectrum, you go, yep, no, Steve, I'm on holiday, but I am determined that I want to continue with my nutrition and get the best result I possibly can. Well, that answer would be, well, okay, you need to continue to track and log whatever food you do eat. So if you are staying at hotels or resorts with buffets, or you're eating out, whatever it is, you would want to try your best to log whatever food you do eat and stay within your calorie goal. That's it, right? The problem with that is it gets really hard. You know, you're having food that you didn't prepare yourself, either from buffets or restaurants, and those foods you're not sure of what the portion sizes are, what ingredients are in there, if there's any extra oils and sauces and things, it gets challenging, right? So then we kind of land on the spot in between where we go, okay, I want to stay on track with my goal, but I'm not super diehard where I want to log every single thing. And I am not super laissé where I'm happy just to have a complete off week. What do I do? The best way to approach this is to appreciate that you're on holiday. Let's have a couple of meals where you're just not counting them. And this individual says that, you know, there's going to be a few dinners where I don't want to think about calories. Okay, so let's use dinner as a landmark that we say, okay, dinner is time where we don't worry about calories, okay? So now all we need to worry about is something like a breakfast and something like a lunch, okay? So if we break up our meals into breakfast, lunch, dinner, dinner is a write-off. We're not even thinking about dinner. Okay, let's consider breakfast and lunch. Ways we can approach this is we can either try to have a consistent breakfast and lunch. So if you're at a hotel and they have like a breakfast buffet or something like that, you can opt for the same type of breakfast every single day. So you're uniforming your breakfast and you might make choices to have more low calorie meals. So instead of having fried eggs, you might have poached eggs. Instead of having toast with butter and jam and Nutella and peanut butter, you might just have just plain toast, right? Or if there's a fruit platter at a breakfast buffet, you have some fruit. So you're opting for more low calorie, more healthy options for breakfast and try to uniform that. So in terms of calorie prescription for that, if your daily calorie prescription is, let's say, 2,000 calories, we're going to try to aim to have 25% of our calories go towards breakfast. Okay, so 2,000 calories, 25%, that is about 500 calories prescribed for breakfast, which can be a really great modest breakfast. You know, it could be some cereal with some low-fat milk, could be some fruit. You've got lots of options there. And the key would be just to have it consistent every single day and have a pretty good appreciation of how many calories on average that meal would be, aiming for about 25% of your calories. Lunch would be the same type of idea. We want to find a space where we could have consistent lunch in a same way, and in a same way to breakfast, we're going to try to find healthy alternatives. So that could be like light meals like salads or really simple sandwiches, trying to avoid lots of deep fried foods or foods that we're just really unsure of what is inside of them. So if there's lots of oils and those types of things. Trying to avoid any like cakes and desserts and sweets for lunch. And again, trying to aim for about 25% of our calorie prescription for lunch. So what happens now is for dinner, we have 50% of our calories for the day prescribed to dinner, which is huge. So if you have 2,000 calories as your goal, either for weight loss or maybe you choose maintenance, whatever, let's say it's 2,000 calories. You've had 500 calories for breakfast, 500 calories for lunch. Now you have 1,000 calories for dinner, which is crazy, right? That's a massive meal, right? So that's a meal, maybe a drink or two, maybe even dessert thrown in there. That can be a very energy dense meal. And if you're choosing to have some healthier alternatives, you know, you can have a really big meal if it is good quality choices, and still would stick within your calorie budget. So if you approach the day like that, breakfast is kind of structured, lunch is kind of structured, and then dinner is a little bit free, but you're allowing yourself to have a large calorie budget, you'll be kind of self-regulated by your hunger, your satiety. So if you are only consuming 2,000 calories, eating 1,000 calories in one meal can be a lot. Even if you did kind of splurge yourself, you might be like, oh my God, I've eaten everything. And if you were to sit there and punch numbers, like, oh geez, I only had like 1,100 calories and I'm absolutely stuffed to the brim. Great. So budgeting it in that way can be a way for you to still stick close to your calorie targets, your nutrition goals, while being a little bit flexible in your approach. Okay. But the main takeaway would be that, hey man, look, you're on holiday, enjoy yourself, do the things that are important to you, spend time with your friends, your family, whatever you're up to, go and enjoy the place that you're doing, go for a swim, go for a hike, go for a walk, take some pictures, do the sightseeing thing, all the stuff, because there's always time for fitness and die hard focused effort towards your goal later. And that's okay. But that's it, team. Let's wrap it up there for this episode of the Rise Method podcast. If you liked the episode, let me know, and I'll catch you next week for another one. See you guys.